Chapter 8. A slight consolation had come to them in an unexpected manner. They had been credibly informed that an ancestor of plebeian willows was once honored with intermarriage with a scion of the aristocracy who had gone to the dogs. In short, such is the foolishness of distinguished parents, and sometimes of others also, that they wrote that very day to the address Barbara had given them, informing her that she might return home, and bring her husband with her. They would not object to see him, would not reproach her, and would endeavor to welcome both, and to discuss with them what could best be arranged for their future. In 3 or 4 days a rather shabby postchaise drew up at the door of Cheen Manor House, at sound of which the tender-hearted baronet and his wife ran out, as if to welcome a prince and princess of the blood. They were overjoyed to see their spoiled child return safe and sound, though she was only Mrs. Willows, wife of Edmund Willows of Nowhere. Barbara burst into penitential tears, and both husband and wife were contrite enough, as well they might be, considering that they had not a guinea to call their own. When the four had calmed themselves, and not a word of chiding had been uttered to the pair, they discussed the position soberly, young Willows sitting in the background with great modesty till invited forward by Lady Grebe in no frigid tone. "How handsome he is!" ... she said to herself. "I don't wonder at Barbara's craze for him." ... he was, indeed, one of the handsomest men who ever set his lips on a maid's. A blue coat, murrey waistcoat, and breeches of drab set off a figure that could scarcely be surpassed. He had large dark eyes, anxious now, as they glanced from Barbara to her parents, and tenderly back again to her, observing whom, even now in her trepidation, one could see why the sang-froid of Lord Uplandtowers had been raised to more than lukewarmness. Her fair young face, according to the tale handed down by old women, looked out from under a gray conical hat, trimmed with white ostrich feathers, and her little toes peeped from a buff petticoat worn under a puce gown. Her features were not regular. They were almost infantine, as you may see from miniatures in possession of the family, her mouth showing much sensitiveness, and one could be sure that her faults would not lie on the side of bad temper, unless for urgent reasons. Well, they discussed their state as became them, and the desire of the young couple to gain the goodwill of those upon whom they were literally dependent for everything induced them to agree to any temporizing measure that was not too irksome. Therefore, having been nearly 2 months united, they did not oppose Sir John's proposal that he should furnish Edmund Willows with funds sufficient for him to travel a year on the continent in the company of a tutor, the young man undertaking to lend himself with the utmost diligence to the tutor's instructions, till he became polished outwardly and inwardly to the degree required in the husband of such a lady as Barbara. He was to apply himself to the study of languages, manners, history, society, ruins, and everything else that came under his eyes, till he should return to take his place without blushing by Barbara's side. "And by that time," said worthy Sir John, "I'll get my little place out at Ushult ready for you and Barbara to occupy on your return. The house is small and out of the way, but it will do for a young couple for a while. ... If 'twere no bigger than a summer house it would do." ... says Barbara. "If 'twere no bigger than a sedan chair." ... says Willows. "And the more lonely the better." ... "We can put up with the loneliness." ... said Barbara, with less zest. "Some friends will come, no doubt." ... All this being laid down, a travel tutor was called in, a man of many gifts and great experience, and on a fine morning away tutor and pupil went. A great reason urged against Barbara accompanying her youthful husband, and was that his attentions to her would naturally be such as to prevent his zealously applying every hour of his time to learning and seeing an argument of wise prescience, and unanswerable. Regular days for letter writing were fixed. Barbara and her Edmund exchanged their last kisses at the door, and the chaise swept under the archway into the drive. He wrote to her from Le Havre. As soon as he reached that port, which was not for 7 days, on account of adverse winds, he wrote from Rouen, and from Paris, described to her his sight of the king and court at Versailles, and the wonderful marble work and mirrors in that palace, wrote next from Lyons, then, after a comparatively long interval, from Turin, narrating his fearful adventures in crossing Mont Cenis on mules, and how he was overtaken with a terrific snowstorm, which had well nigh been the end of him, and his tutor, and his guides. Then he wrote glowingly of Italy, and Barbara could see the development of her husband's mind reflected in his letters month by month, and she much admired the forethought of her father in suggesting this education for Edmund. Yet she sighed sometimes her husband being no longer in evidence, to fortify her in her choice of him, and timidly dreaded what mortifications might be in store for her by reason of this mésalliance. She went out very little, for on the one or two occasions on which she had shown herself to former friends she noticed a distinct difference in their manner, as though they should say, "Ah, my happy swain's wife, you're caught." Edmund's letters were as affectionate as ever, even more affectionate, after a while, than hers were to him. Barbara observed this growing coolness in herself, and like a good and honest lady was horrified and grieved, since her only wish was to act faithfully and uprightly. It troubled her so much that she prayed for a warmer heart, and at last, wrote to her husband to beg him, now that he was in the land of art, to send her his portrait, ever so small, that she might look at it all day and every day, and never for a moment forget his features. Willows was nothing loth, and replied that he would do more than she wished. He had made friends with a sculptor in Pisa, who was much interested in him and his history, and he had commissioned this artist to make a bust of himself in marble, which when finished he would send her. What Barbara had wanted was something immediate, but she expressed no objection to the delay, and in his next communication Edmund told her that the sculptor, of his own choice, had decided to increase the bust to a full-length statue, so anxious was he to get a specimen of his skill introduced to the notice of the English aristocracy. It was progressing well, and rapidly. Meanwhile, Barbara's attention began to be occupied at home with Ushult Lodge, the house that her kind-hearted father was preparing for her residence when her husband returned. It was a small place on the plan of a large one, a cottage built in the form of a mansion, having a central hall with a wooden gallery running round it, and rooms no bigger than closets to follow this introduction. It stood on a slope so solitary, and surrounded by trees so dense, that the birds who inhabited the boughs sang at strange hours, as if they hardly could distinguish night from day. During the progress of repairs at this bower, Barbara frequently visited it. Though so secluded by the dense growth, it was near the high road, and one day, while looking over the fence, she saw Lord Uplandtowers riding past. He saluted her courteously, yet with mechanical stiffness, and did not halt. Barbara went home, and continued to pray that she might never cease to love her husband. After that she sickened, and did not come out of doors again for a long time. The year of education had extended to 14 months, and the house was in order for Edmund's return to take up his abode there with Barbara, when, instead of the accustomed letter for her, came one to Sir John Grebe in the handwriting of the said tutor, informing him of a terrible catastrophe that had occurred to them at Venice. Mr. Willows and himself had attended the theater one night during the carnival of the preceding week, to witness the Italian comedy, when, owing to the carelessness of one of the candle snuffers, the theater had caught fire and been burnt to the ground. Few persons had lost their lives, owing to the superhuman exertions of some of the audience in getting out the senseless sufferers. And, among them all, he who had risked his own life the most heroically was Mr. Willows. In re-entering for the fifth time to save his fellow creatures, some fiery beams had fallen upon him, and he had been given up for lost. He was, however, by the blessing of Providence, recovered, With the life still in him, though he was fearfully burnt, and by almost a miracle he seemed likely to survive, his constitution being wondrously sound. He was, of course, unable to write, but he was receiving the attention of several skillful surgeons. Further report would be made by the next mail, or by private hand. The tutor said nothing in detail of poor Willow's sufferings, but as soon as the news was broken to Barbara, she realized how intense they must have been, and her immediate instinct was to rush to his side, though, on consideration, the journey seemed impossible to her. Her health was by no means what it had been, and to post across Europe at that season of the year, or to traverse the Bay of Biscay in a sailing craft, was an undertaking that would hardly be justified by the result. But she was anxious to go till, on reading to the end of the letter, her husband's tutor was found to hint very strongly against such a step, if it should be contemplated, this being also the opinion of the surgeons. And though Willow's comrade refrained from giving his reasons, they disclosed themselves plainly enough in the sequel. The truth was that the worst of the wounds resulting from the fire had occurred to his head and face, that handsome face which had won her heart from her, and both the tutor and the surgeons knew that for a sensitive young woman, to see him before his wounds had healed would cause more misery to her by the shock than happiness to him by her ministrations. Lady Grebe blurted out what Sir John and Barbara had thought, but it had too much delicacy to express. "Sure, 'tis mighty hard for you, poor Barbara, that the one little gift he had to justify your rash choice of him, his wonderful good looks, should be taken away like this, to leave ye no excuse at all for your conduct in the world's eyes. Well, I wish you'd married Tother, that do I." And the lady sighed. "He'll soon get right again," said her father soothingly. Such remarks as the above were not often made, but they were frequent enough to cause Barbara an uneasy sense of self-stultification. She determined to hear them no longer, and the house at Ushult, being ready and furnished, she withdrew thither with her maids, where for the first time she could feel mistress of a home that would be hers and her husband's exclusively, when he came. After long weeks, Willows had recovered sufficiently to be able to write himself, and slowly and tenderly he enlightened her upon the full extent of his injuries. It was a mercy, he said, that he had not lost his sight entirely, but he was thankful to say that he still retained full vision in one eye, though the other was dark forever. The sparing manner in which he meted out particulars of his condition told Barbara how appalling had been his experience. He was grateful for her assurance that nothing could change her, but feared she did not fully realize that he was so sadly disfigured as to make it doubtful if she would recognize him. However, in spite of all, his heart was as true to her as it ever had been. Barbara saw from his anxiety how much lay behind. She replied that she submitted to the decrees of fate, and would welcome him in any shape, as soon as he could come. She told him of the pretty retreat in which he had taken up her abode, pending their joint occupation of it, and did not reveal how much he had sighed over the information that all his good looks were gone. Still less did she say that she felt a certain strangeness in awaiting him, the weeks they had lived together having been so short by comparison with the length of his absence. Slowly drew on the time when Willows found himself well enough to come home. He landed at Southampton, and posted thence towards Ushult. Barbara arranged to go out to meet him as far as Lornton, in the spot between the forest and the chase at which he had waited for night on the evening of their elopement. Thither she drove at the appointed hour in a little pony chaise, presented her by her father on her birthday for her especial use in her new house, which vehicle she sent back on arriving at the inn, the plan agreed upon being that she should perform the return journey with her husband in his hired coach. There was not much accommodation for a lady at this wayside tavern, but, as it was a fine evening in early summer, she did not mind walking about outside, and straining her eyes along the highway for the expected one. But each cloud of dust that enlarged in the distance and drew near was found to disclose a conveyance other than his postchaise. Barbara remained till the appointment was 2 hours past, and then began to fear that owing to some adverse wind in the channel he was not coming that night. While waiting, she was conscious of a curious trepidation that was not entirely solicitude, and did not amount to dread. Her tense state of incertitude bordered both on disappointment and on relief. As he had lived 6 or 7 weeks with an imperfectly educated, yet handsome husband whom now as he had not seen for 17 months, and who was so changed physically by an accident that she was assured she would hardly know him. Can we wonder at her compound state of mind? But her immediate difficulty was to get away from Lornton Inn, for her situation was becoming embarrassing. Like too many of Barbara's actions, this drive had been undertaken without much reflection. Expecting to wait no more than a few minutes for her husband in his postchaise, and to enter it with him, as he had not hesitated to isolate herself by sending back her own little vehicle. She now found that, being so well known in this neighborhood, her excursion to meet her long-absent husband was exciting great interest. She was conscious that more eyes were watching her from the inn windows than met her own gaze. Barbara had decided to get home by hiring whatever kind of conveyance the tavern afforded, when, straining her eyes for the last time over the now darkening highway, she perceived yet another dust cloud drawing near. She paused. A chariot ascended to the inn, and would have passed had not its occupant caught sight of her standing expectantly. The horses were checked on the instant. "You here and alone, my dear Mrs. Willows?" said Lord Uplandtowers, whose carriage it was. She explained what had brought her into this lonely situation, and, as he was going in the direction of her own home, she accepted his offer of a seat beside him. Their conversation was embarrassed and fragmentary at first. But when they had driven a mile or two, she was surprised to find herself talking earnestly and warmly to him. Her impulsiveness was in truth, but the natural consequence of her late existence, a somewhat desolate one by reason of the strange marriages he had made. And there is no more indiscreet mood than that of a woman surprised into talk who has long been imposing upon herself a policy of reserve. Therefore her ingenuous heart rose with a bound into her throat when, in response to his leading questions, or rather hints, she allowed her troubles to leak out of her. Lord Uplandtowers took her quite to her own door, although he had driven 3 miles out of his way to do so, and in handing her down she heard from him a whisper of stern reproach. "It need not have been thus if you had listened to me." She made no reply, and went indoors. There, as the evening wore away, she regretted more and more that as he had been so friendly with Lord Uplandtowers. But he had launched himself upon her so unexpectedly. If as he had only foreseen the meeting with him, what a careful line of conduct she would have marked out. Barbara broke into a perspiration of disquiet when she thought of her unreserve, and, in self-chastisement, resolved to sit up till midnight on the bare chance of Edmund's return, directing that supper should be laid for him, improbable as his arrival till the morrow was. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.